asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're going to answer some of your listener questions.
Buddy, it's Monday, which means we've got listener money questions to get to. A listener is wanting to know what he should be doing about higher property taxes, about higher insurance premiums that are affecting his escrow payment in particular. Another listener wants to know if a HELOC ever makes sense. And then, do you ever get to a point to where you should stop investing for your future, for your retirement?
It's like, whoa there, Turbo. You're going too hard.
We're
going
to talk about that plus more during today's episode.
You mentioned we were getting money questions. Do we ever get any other kind of questions, Matt? Do people like ask you for generic life advice?
Yeah,
or
we've had folks, let's see.
Fashion questions. How do you look so hip?
Somebody asked about like other parenting tips one time when it came to financially preparing, but any other general advice you might have? You remember that one?
I'd tune into you for parenting tips. I really would.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I'm not sure if you're being...
I'm being 100%. Okay. 100%.
Well, I don't know if this falls under good advice or bad advice, because I've got a frugal or cheap for
okay.
you. You know, like
at the expense of your children?
Yeah. So our kids, like they go to school, they get their school portrait taken, right? And then the company, they blast you nonstop with the emails to buy this photo package. Here's a picture of them with this background, hoping that one of those is going to appeal to you.
8 wallets, only $39.99.
Yeah, exactly. So here's what I do, though. I go on there and I find whatever setting allows me to view the picture at its absolute largest. Because, you know, you see the little tiny little thumbnail in the email. But go ahead, click the link, go to their pay, the actual website, and you've got the big version. So I do that. I click and drag, or, you know, control click, right click, save that image to the desktop. And I've got 3 images of, actually, I've got 6 images because I did this last year.
You run them through Photoshop?
2. No! Although I hadn't even thought about that with the AI.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't even matter though. I don't care if the watermark is on there because I'm not looking.
I think it only makes your kids look better.
I'm not looking for some sort of like 4K perfect landscape giant image of them. I just want to be able to see something that's a reminder of them. And specifically for knowledge workers, right? Like for white collar workers who are sitting at a computer all day. I think the ability just to let it sit there on your desktop, it's there to remind you of your family. It's there. It's just a way for me to think about them throughout the day. And it's funny you mentioned the wallets, because that's sort of what that was back in the day. Like,
right.
We're old enough
right.
to remember. I bet you remember in high school. And for me, it was like the upperclassmen. And if you're able to snag like a wallet of someone's senior pick, you know, like you've got your lady friends.
It meant y'all were tight.
Huh?
It meant you guys were
close.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
There's a nice little note with a little heart on the back of it or something like that. I mean, it kind of made you feel nice. It's not that you would take that image and like frame it and
yeah.
stick it up on the wall, but you would literally stick it in your wallet. But what happens when you stick it in your wallet? It gets crushed, maybe it gets folded, it's behind that plastic that starts fading, and you can't hardly barely see the image anyway, but it's there as a reminder. And so in the same way, I feel like that this acts as a just a way to kind of remember the kids.
It also kind of feels like a relic of a bygone era. That
the wallets.
It was just a time when we didn't have great photo technology within the palm of our hand. And so we got the professional photos taken by the super professional person. Mm-hmm. And now we can take pretty darn near professional photos
pretty
on the phones
good.
That we have. Even if like you suck with a camera like I do, I can take good pictures of my kids.
Yeah,
and so I think it can be a really expensive thing. I think a lot of people feel guilted into it. Oh, I don't love my kids if I don't buy the $85 photo package through the school. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's the case.
So do you think it's frugal or cheap to pull the watermark version?
I'm going to say it's frugal. I think if you're editing it and then printing them.
Like well, you're the one that was just like, oh, you should be using Photoshop and AI.
Well, I just knowing your skills, your former profession, being a professional photographer, I was just thinking if anybody could do it, it's probably Matt. But I think that might be a little over the top. If you went
so I just made it to where you can see my desktop. You see him sitting up there?
Like, adorbs.
So those are, that's last year's right there. I like it.
Yeah.
I will say last year we did actually buy the photos because we're like, they went to a new school, first year at the new school. So, but even still, we haven't printed them out. It's not like we've got these prints in our house. And so
you just bought the CD with the picture on?
$40 download or 20. Yeah, maybe it's like $20. But anyway, all that to say, I think it's worth thinking through the application. How are you going to be using those photos? If you do want to print a large enlargement or whatever and hang it up in your house, sure, go ahead and order the dang thing.
And let's be honest, the way most
that's
people
not what I'm doing.
Follow your family now, it's not through the annual photos done by the school. It's by whatever you post on social media.
That's true.
Like that. Yep. So not that I'm great at that. I post like once a year, so my family rarely gets updates, or at least my extended family who lives on the West Coast.
They're like, oh, whoa, you got another kid. Great.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Congratulations. All right, Matt, let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This is called Double Duck Pin by Union Craft Brewing. Big thanks to listener Luke for sending us this double IPA. We'll give our thoughts at the end of the episode.
Luke G, specifically.
Luke G.
Don't want to say your last name.
He is.
Just in case you're concerned from a privacy standpoint, but you know who you are.
Because then all these other people reaching out to you. Can you send me some beer, Luke?
The other Luke G is like, what? I didn't send anything to beer.
All right, let's move on though, Matt. Let's get to the listener questions. And if you have a money question for us, or really any kind of question, if you have a parenting question for Matt, please submit it. But you can go to howtomoney.com/ask for the simple instructions. It's basically just recording a voice memo on your phone, sending it our way via email. Matt, let's get to the first question. This one is from listener Corey, who wants to know about whether or not he can raise rates on his tenant.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Corey in Durham, North Carolina. Brewery I'd like to recommend to you guys is Highwire. I love their IPAs. But I have a bit of a question. I have a property, and on that property, my escrow has increased by about $200, which significantly cuts into the profits from that property. I was curious what you guys' opinion would be on either increasing the price for the rent, or would I have to wait until the end of our current lease in order to do that? Thanks for all you do, and I appreciate you taking my question. Bye.
Corey, thank you so much for that brewery recommendation. It's been a minute since I've had some Highwire. That's there out of Asheville, North Carolina. And I think the reason why
it's the beer mecca of the South.
Basically, Beer City, USA. If you like IPAs, Corey, check out Burial's IPAs as well, which is also originally based at... Oh, didn't they open a location in Durham?
Or they might, Charlotte they might or have, I don't Raleigh? Know.
Like another, I think they announced a second location.
But I love their beers.
Super good. Highwire is also great. But there is a lot to talk about with Corey's question here. First off, you know, one of the great things about home ownership is that your monthly payment essentially stays the same.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not completely set in stone, and that's because property tax and insurance increases, they still come down the pike, and a $200 a month increase, that is not easy to, what, a month. That is not easy to stomach, but it is not unheard of, especially in the current economic environment where property values have gone up significantly across much of the country. And then insurance rates, they're also moving up at a rapid clip as well. Both of those things are leading to higher escrow. They're leading to escrow shortages and receiving this bad news envelope showing up in your mail saying, oh, there has been a shortage and we actually had to front you some money in order. If there was a negative balance, oh my gosh, you're going to see your escrow go up significantly.
We were down in Florida for a second last week and the property appraiser drove up to my father-in-law's property and he was like,
quick, splash some paint, paint all over the door.
Make this place look like trash real quick, you know? That's the kind of thing where you're shaking in your boots right now, depending on what state you live in, because I believe in California, those increases are capped at 2% a year, but in a lot of states, there is no cap to how much their the property valuation can go up. And so you might see like a 20% increase, and that's going to, of course, affect your mortgage payment.
Yeah.
That's one of the selling points typically of buying versus renting is, hey, your payment's going to stay the same. And that's kind of mostly true, but it's not all the way
speaking,
true.
Yes, but yeah, you're still going to see a portion of that affected by what's going on in the market.
And specifically, this is exactly why landlords need to have breathing room built in to be able to handle increased expenses like that, because you just have to plan for the unexpected, whether it's a repair, replacement of something at the house, but also if it's just a higher mortgage payment because of rising insurance costs or something like that. But the question that Corey asks is, like, can he raise rent to help cover that increased expense? Yeah, let's talk about that. First, you got to know the market, right? Because you can't charge more than the market will bear, no matter how high your individual costs are. Let's say you just talked about budgeting for replacing stuff. Let's say you need a roof replacement that costs $10,000. That's on you. No matter how much you'd like your tenant to participate in that cost, sorry, that's not how it works. They have a signed lease and you're the landlord. You are in charge of providing a habitable place, and you've got that roof repair, the cost solely comes under your jurisdiction. And it's one of the toughest parts about being a landlord, because remaining profitable while maintaining the property and funneling dollars into renovations along the way as they're needed, that can be, that's not always easy, right? And so many landlords decide that it's not for them because it requires more work and more money than they first assumed. And Matt, I don't know about you, like the cherry on top for me is appreciation oftentimes of the property. The year over year profit can sometimes be meager if you're keeping the property up in the way that you need to.
Yeah, but going back to what you said initially, the market is going to decide as to what you can charge your tenant. And Corey, this is where you don't have to worry about it. Like, on one hand, like, it sucks that you are paying more every month and towards your whoever is servicing your mortgage. But on the other hand, you don't have to stress about it because the market is going to decide. This is the what Adam Smith calls the invisible hand. You can attempt to list it for more than what going rates are.
You'll just hear crickets.
But then the market will let you know that, oh, that actually is not going to work. And so I know on one hand it sucks, but on the other hand, it's also not the end of the world, because you will most likely quickly be able to figure out what it is that the market can sustain.
Yeah, yeah. If you try to charge more than market rate, a level-headed tenant will find another place. You'll lose even more money because your property will be sitting vacant. So it's really important to kind of, and the best way to really figure out what the market rate is for your rental property is, I think, to look at Zillow and see what similar, you know, bed, bath, square footage homes, similar location, like what they're going for, what other people are asking. That's a really good way to hone in and see, well, what can I ask? And Corey, he asked about raising rent in the middle of the lease. Is that possible? Well, the answer to that is also typically no, not doable. The lease protects you in a whole lot of ways, Corey, as the landlord, but it also protects the tenant in other ways. And the tenant, for instance, can't bail in the middle, leave you in the lurch without incurring financial ramifications that you're due, but it also protects them from rent increases coming out of left field too. It gives them a fixed monthly cost for the duration of the lease. So you're likely going to have to eat these increased monthly costs until that lease is up. At that point, you can renegotiate with your current tenants, or you can put it back on the market in hopes that you're going to find another tenant who's willing to pay more. But again, that comes back to market factors, and rents have been softening. So I don't know, maybe you're already at the top. Depends on how much you're charging and what the market will currently bear. But raising rent in the middle of the lease is typically an impossibility.
No bueno. Yeah, you can't do that. Well, so you said rents have been softening. The increases have been softening. So there's data from CoreLogic, and they showed that the national year-over-year rent increases that they have actually returned to pre-pandemic levels. They're more at a reasonable rate. Although some markets have seen actual rent decreases. There are some markets where it's slightly under, I think, like Miami, like some of the more Sun Belt. Miami isn't Sun Belt, but I saw that Miami was one of the markets. But regardless, unless you are charging your current tenants a below market rate, you might find that you're actually not able to raise the rent when it comes time for them to renew, and that the price that you're charging and the rate that they're paying is actually fair. And so this is when looking to Zillow to see what similar properties are going for in the area. That'll give you a good idea of what it is that you might be able to charge. But so much of it also comes down to the specific property. This might be a place that you used to live in. Congrats, by the way. You said that this is your first rental, or maybe this is the first time you've rented your home. So maybe you used to live here. Maybe this thing is decked out and it's got incredible amenities. It's in a killer location. Maybe it's like the crown jewel of the entire neighborhood. Well, if so, heck, you can charge a 10-20% premium perhaps on that property compared to surrounding properties. But again, the market will let you know via this invisible hand that will lower the price for you.
Yeah.
And no harm, no foul, except that, I don't know, there might be some renters who see the price drop and maybe they're thinking, oh, maybe there's something wrong with that house. There might be a stigma attached to it. I know when it comes to houses that are being sold, realtors really don't like
having them drop the price, yeah.
Yeah, houses that have a high days on market number there next to the property. And I don't know. It comes down to the individual, whoever it is that is looking to rent the property, because I don't know. It only takes one renter to say, that is perfect. That is exactly what we need. You never know individual circumstances and what it is that they're willing to pay. And that's all a part of the overall average. There might be an employer who's footing the bill when it comes to housing costs because they've relocated somebody to your market and they're maybe a little less price sensitive when it comes to rents. There are so many different factors, and so I wouldn't worry too much about charging slightly high, or at least going for slightly higher rent in order to try to maximize your profits.
I'll say anecdotal over here, trying to rent out a property right now, and I might have met my first month of vacancy ever, sadly. So it does appear that there's less demand, at least in the specific neighborhood in Atlanta I'm trying to rent out.
Well, Atlanta is one of the markets. It hasn't decreased, but it was almost flatlined.
Yeah.
There's
a softer 0.6%
increase year over year right now from last year, which is a very...
It feels slight, but I think that reflects just a weakening demand in a lot of markets, and particularly in the Atlanta market. But I think more than anything, what this points to for Corey is just you have to have more cash on hand as a real estate mogul that you are, Corey. You have to be more able to stomach a $200 a month increase in your mortgage payment. And hopefully that's just a one-time thing, right? It's unlikely that property taxes and insurance rates are going to continue to increase at the same rapid clip. But you have to have that built-in additional money so that you can handle swings like this. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't kind of undo your investing goals, right?
Totally. I think what you said is true, which is don't expect these increases to continue in future years. But do take this into account, and especially given the fact that this might be a relatively new venture for you, don't forget that maybe... if this isn't something that you want to do, you can always sell the property. As long as you've lived in it too out of the past 5 years, you can avoid paying capital gains on that property when the time comes to sell. And so keep that in mind as well. You've got perhaps...
options.
Yeah. It sounds like the impression I get, he said this is... he's at 1.5 years of a 2-year lease or something like that. And it's a nice trial period to figure out whether or not this is something that, Corey, that you actually want to continue or not.
Because like we always say, there's so many real estate influencers out there and they want to make it sound like investing in real estate is the only way to make big bucks in this world. And they kind of want to make it sound like it's this passive income play too. The truth is a lot murkier than that. And like real estate investing as a way to build wealth. But there's also a lot of education you have to go through and a lot of trial and error that you have to go through as well. It's a part-time job more than just a passive investment. So,
exactly.
All right, Matt, speaking of investing, we've got more to get to, including a listener wants to know whether he can just stop investing altogether. We'll get to that question and more right after this. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
We are back from the break, and Joel, let's hear from a listener who is completely killing it when it comes to his personal finances.
Hey, Matt and Joel. My name is Nick from upstate New York. My wife and I have been diligently saving and investing for about 25 years, and we are firmly in Money Gear 7. We have no debt, including no mortgage. We've managed to save $1.5 million between 401k, 403b, and Roth IRAs. We have also saved enough to provide college educations to our two kids, so they have no debt when they graduate. We have a great relationship with money, and we use it to fund our passions and save for the future, but have always lived well below our means. And Matt, I'm an Excel guy too. My favorite day of the quarter is our quarterly financial review. I just love it. I'm 45, my wife is 50, and we have always both planned to retire at 55. My question is, can we stop saving for retirement? When do we know when we have enough? When I run the projections, even at a conservative return rate, the base we have built would appear to grow substantially and exceeds our need in retirement. That doesn't even count Social Security or my wife's pension. Any thoughts would be welcome. Thank you for a great podcast.
Matt, it would be adorable to watch you two pore over Excel spreadsheets together. I would that could be like a reality TV show that I would tune in for.
So you wouldn't find it interesting because it's not your money, but when it's your money, it is interesting.
That's true.
And what's like what I like about what so Nick, so my like Kate and I, we do like throughout the month I'll send her updates, and at the end of the month I'll send her like a big update. And then other than that, like we only talk about money like at the end of the year or at the very beginning of the year as we're kind of laying out our goals for the year. But I like what Nick said.
You guys
said.
Have laid the groundwork for so many years. You just don't need to be broaching it like on a weekly
but
basis.
But then I hear how Nick is totally killing it. And I think, well, maybe if we move to a quarterly system and maybe, we'd be in such a great financial position like him and his family are. He and his family. I want to say it properly.
Don't do yourself a disservice. Like you're well on your way there.
Well, thank you.
But no, Nick is crushing it. Crushing it might even be an understatement considering all he's been able to accomplish. And front-loading the sacrifice, that's a term that our friend Doc G has used on this podcast before. And I think that's exactly what Nick has done. Like, but he also hasn't deprived himself along the way. He says they're using those funds to be able to enjoy life at the same time. So, but it does sound like Nick and his wife have been able to save and invest more money than they actually needed to. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with having more money set aside than you're actually likely going to need. I'm actually working towards the same goal, Matt. Like, I want to keep my desires in check, but I want to continue saving and investing for the future so that I can fund bigger, so I've got even more flexibility and potentially more ability to be philanthropic at some point in the future as well. I love the idea of investing for independence and maximum flexibility, which is exactly where Nick is going to end up. And having more money in those retirement accounts than is actually necessary offers both of those things, so, as long as it isn't causing you to deprive yourself, right? That is the balance we need to strike here as like diligent savers and investors. But it obviously sounds like Nick's in the Coast Fire camp, which means he really doesn't need to invest any more dollars if he doesn't want to. I think I'm going to sign off on his plan here, Matt, of ceasing his investments altogether. If he wants to, no need to contribute another dime.
Totally. Yeah. And I think so much of it comes down to whether or not he's got a plan for those additional dollars, because that's what's so great about investing. It's one thing to halt investing altogether. It's another thing to halt investing for retirement, because if you've got goals that are a number of years off, it still makes sense to invest that money just to make sure that A, it's not getting eroded by inflation, but B, because you're going to see higher returns with that money actually invested in the market.
True.
But I think there's like a psychological component to this too, where you are so used to setting money aside to saving and investing that it's difficult to remove that discipline, just like I bet with for him, for me to say, hey, you got to give up that quarterly financial review, he'd be like, no. that is not something that I'm going to do, because it is a practice and it's a discipline that has allowed him to get to where he is. But in this case, when it comes to investing, it might be a challenge, I guess is what I'm saying here, to stop doing that, or even to kind of like crank the dial down a little bit when before he was going like full throttle.
Well, it almost becomes like baked into your nature, right?
Exactly.
You're like, oh, I'm an investor. I invest something like 25% of my money every single year, and look where it's gotten me.
It's the default knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think transitioning from frugal investor to smart spender can be really hard. And that's
totally
something that Nick's going to have to confront as he, and so maybe it is a slower process of dialing back how much you're investing and maybe prioritizing taxable brokerage accounts for more near-term goals than retirement accounts. But maybe let's talk about the specifics too of why investing more doesn't actually need to be the case for Nick. Why, by the way, this is not advice for, I think, the vast majority of our listeners, Matt. Should you be investing? Probably, right? It's just, I guess when you're at the point Nick's at, when you've been investing diligently for a long, long period of time, this is when you have the option to stop investing if you don't want to anymore. No debt, including no mortgage. This contributes to the fact that Nick doesn't necessarily need to be investing anymore, because guess what? He's not going to have a mortgage payment during those retirement years. And he's already amassed $1.5 million in his investment accounts. And on average, that's going to double every 7 to 8 years if invested mostly in the stock market. So by the time Nick retires, he's going to have more than $3 million based on historical return assumptions, right? And so you're not even factoring in, by the way, guaranteed monthly checks from pension and Social Security, which you can delay even further till age 70, getting the maximum amount every month. I mean, I'd be curious to know how much those two fixed amounts are and whether they're going to cover all of your monthly needs or not, but I would imagine they're going to get close, especially given how frugal you are. So it just seems like you're covered here on all fronts, and even most of what you've been able to amass in retirement accounts is kind of gravy on top. So I think you can feel comfortable reducing what you're funneling into investment accounts and actually bring forward some of that consumption. And that's typically what investing is. It's deferred consumption, right? At some point, you want to use those dollars. Well, you don't need to defer consumption anymore. You can actually bring some of that more into your life right now.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the criticisms for starting to shift away from investing and saving for retirement is the fact that he's looking to retire earlier. I think he said 55 is the age that him and his wife had always planned on retiring. So like, especially if you were to go see a financial advisor, that would be something that they would be like, oh, don't you want to work a little bit longer and just build a little more of a buffer, a little bit more of a padding there into your finances. But the fact is, he's an Excel nerd. I mean, he knows the numbers. And if you've crunched the numbers, then you know that you've got more than enough on hand. Plus, we're talking about other accounts. He's got fully funded accounts for his kids for college. He has thought through all the different potential places where he might see increased demand on his finances. And so with that, I wouldn't say, hey, you need to like quit tomorrow, Nick, but it does sound like that you've got a good plan put together and that you will be able to rely on the amount that you've set aside and Social Security and your wife's pension. Like, you've got all these multiple streams of income as well, and that takes the risk off of having to tap those traditional retirement accounts as well.
And they're not only multiple streams of income, Matt. These are multiple streams of highly predictable income. When you don't know what the return in the market's going to be. Let's say the market has a downturn for a few years, and that could make it more difficult, at least psychologically, but even it just ultimately reduces your capital too that you can draw down on when you have multiple fixed income sources, significant fixed income sources, and no mortgage at the same time. It just offers you a whole lot more flexibility than most people are going
to
have.
So much optionality to basically choose your adventure as to what it is that you want to do. And he mentioned too how he's got passions and hobby, just different things that he is pursuing. I would say, man, think through, and I don't know if this would like taint those fun things that you do, but it's even worth considering. All right, are there ways that I could start like pursuing some like side gigs or something like in the direction of the things that you enjoy? Because I don't know, what's more fun than actually earning a little bit of income from something that you also love spending time talking about or doing? And I don't know. I think there might be folks who have mixed
opinions.
Sometimes
it can ruin your relationship.
That's exactly. I don't want it to, like I said, I don't want it to taint your enjoyment of that thing. Maybe you're like, nope, I just like to go play golf. Like, I don't want to be a golf instructor. I don't want to work at the golf club or the clubhouse.
You mean disc golf, right?
No, I'm like real golf.
Oh, okay.
I grew up.
That sounds like a slight.
I grew
my
up
favorite
washing
sport.
Golf carts and being a four caddy.
When you live in Augusta, Georgia, that is kind of what you.
It's a typical teenage job.
But that's right.
Nick, we hope that gets you pointed in the right direction. And yeah, it sounds like you have done an incredible job. But Joel, let's get to a subject that we haven't. It's been a minute since we've talked about this. Listeners got a question about I-bonds.
Hi, guys. Love the podcast. I had a question about my I-bonds. My wife and I hold three $10,000 I-bonds for less than 5 years. The I-bonds have had various interest rates throughout their life, from down below 3% to now 9.5%. I know you've said in the past that you forfeit one quarter of interest from the I-bonds if you cash them either partially or fully before 5 years is up. So my question is, what quarter do they use as far as forfeiting that? Is it the most recent quarter, the oldest quarter, or could I choose my own quarter? Look forward to your answer. Thanks.
Oh, Matt, you're right. We have not talked about I-bonds in quite a while, and they're not completely off my radar, but man, I remember when the 9.62% I-bond came out, and it was like kind of mind-blowing.
They were very much on my radar for like 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then after that, they've kind of fallen off.
They were like the sexy thing of the moment, and then that kind of went away. Although, and we'll talk about this, new I-bond buyers are actually getting a rate of 5.27%, which includes a fixed rate, I think, of 1.3%. Which is pretty good. So
not too shabby.
Yeah, the downside of opting for that over a savings account is that inflation is likely to continue moderating. I mean, I say likely to. Like, there's a lot of pressure being put to reduce the rate of inflation. And that would mean that despite the fixed rate being decent, the overall rate is likely to decline. But it does make I-bonds a little more enticing, even though the overall headline rate is certainly not close to 10% like it was before. Like 5.27 with that fixed guaranteed rate attached to it is pretty good right now.
Yeah, yeah. So I think a lot of folks are thinking, but I can get something virtually identical to that by going with a high yield savings account. And by doing that, you wouldn't have to jump through any hoops or risk losing interest if you just stick that money there in that online account.
That's true.
But again, you've got something else you got to consider, and that's that the Fed is likely to cut rates this year, and that's going to have a direct impact on savers. And so,
and I-bonds alike, right?
Yeah. Like I'm thinking of CIT and Betterment, like maybe they are currently paying north of 5% right now. Well, they might not be in November if rate cuts actually happen, as many folks think they will, which in my mind, it kind of highlights the value proposition that CD, certificates of deposits, that they offer right now, the ability to lock that money up in an account where you're earning like over 5% for 12 to 18 months. That could actually be a pretty smart way to go. So something to consider, Scott, maybe not just completely pulling out of I-bonds, but maybe kind of shuttling some of that money over to CDs.
Yeah, yeah, I think CDs could make more sense than I-bonds now, especially, and so much depends on when you got into I-bonds and when you should ditch them. And so Scott specifically asked about, well, What, and it's true, if you don't hold on to an IBON for at least 5 years, you forfeit 3 months of interest. Well, what interest are you forfeiting? You're actually forfeiting the most recent 3 months of interest. And when you look at your balance...
I feel like we should have a special ding where we actually answer someone's question.
Yeah, right, yeah. I feel like so much preamble.
A lot of times we always just talk about other aspects of it, making sure that everyone is informed, because we take these questions as a way to teach folks.
Well, when you
we have actually finally answered Scott's question.
Yes,
the most recent 3 months, we're Scott.
Most recent 3 months. And when you go to treasurydirect.gov, you log in to that really crummy website into your account to see your IBONs, and you'll see, okay, I put $10,000 in, and it's, you know, right now it's worth $10,800 and something dollars if I were to cash out today. Well, that is actually showing you with the most recent 3 months interest forfeited. So that is the amount you'll cash out at. It's important to mention that. That's how they kind of keep score. So what do you want to do? Should you get out of these IBONs and get into a CD? Well, you might want to do different things depending on the purchase date, right? You actually might want to hold on to IBONs that you bought, let's say, in 2021. And if you bought them more recently in 2023, well, those you might want to sell. And so much depends on the 3 month penalty, how close you are to that 5 year mark, because you do forfeit those 3 months of interest. And if you're getting closer to hitting that 5 year mark, well, you might just want to hold on a little longer. With your 2021 IBONs, you're basically more than 3 years into a 5 year term, right? And so if rates remain reasonably competitive in the 4-ish% range, then holding on to avoid that penalty, it might make sense. But the outcomes are honestly, are likely to be fairly similar. So I would just probably suggest taking the simple route, whatever's simpler to you.
Totally. And just to completely avoid the treasurydirect.gov and the headache that accompanies that.
That might be another reason just to cash out completely and be done with it and move into an easier savings
Which
product.
Seems silly, but I think for a lot of folks, the ability to streamline your personal finances is huge. And I think this actually could be the best move. You know, just sell all of your IBONs, get into a higher interest rate vehicle like a CD, because we are talking about a fairly small amount of difference in what you'll earn by selling and forfeiting a portion of interest in order to get a higher rate vehicle versus staying put and riding it out. And so if you do decide to sell all of your IBONs, which I probably would if I were you, then I think one way to kind of time it is by pulling the trigger and doing that after a recent bout of lower interest payouts. So basically sell after 3 straight months of low interest, and just after the first day of the fourth month.
So day 2 of the month, maybe, after those interest pay. There are really weird things.
Just play safe and wait till day 3. Make sure you're fully into the queue, whatever.
Yeah. So there's someone on YouTube, Jennifer, I believe her channel is called Diamond Nest Egg, and she dives deep on IBONs. And so if you want to know like everything about IBONs, more than maybe you even planned on encountering, like I would suggest her as a resource. We try to kind of hit the high points, and IBONs were great. They're still pretty solid, but not for everyone. And again, especially if we're talking about IBONs versus investing is the way to go if you've got a long time horizon.
Yes. Well, so much of this has to do with what it is that you want to do with this money. And if you are just sticking it in IBONs because you're like, well, I just want to I want a more guaranteed rate of return, but this is for a goal of yours that you have that's like 10 years out, and even 5 years out, you probably should be avoiding these more fixed income products and instead actually be investing your dollars.
Okay, but let's say we are going from IBONs to a CD, then start shopping for CDs, right? And Bankrate does a good job listing those. Marcus by Goldman Sachs seems to have the best rate at this moment in time. I think they've got like a 14-month CD in the 5.25-5.5 range. So I would look into that. And by the way, it's important to mention that even if you sold your IBONs now and you opted to stick your money in IBONs with the higher fixed rate right now, let's say you traded in some of those older IBONs and you said, listen, I want the higher fixed rate and the higher overall rate that I'm making right now because the IBONs I bought didn't come with a fixed rate, you'd make up for the interest lost in just about 8 months' time. So that can even be another strategy if you still want the inflation protection that comes from having IBONds as part of your savings portfolio.
Feel like the comfort of an IBON.
Yeah. If you're like, oh man, I don't think they've tamped down this inflation thing. I think it's going to continue to, or I just want that downside protection against potentially higher consistent inflation. That's what IBONs provide for a lot of people. Is it necessary for the average person? probably not.
Yeah. But and then again, like, I guess one of the downsides too of iBonds is you're still limited to just $10,000. And so if you were looking to stash a larger sum of money, you're still going to be limited to how much you can sock away. And so with that in mind, that's when
$10,000 a year, right?
$10,000 a year per individual, yep, per social security number.
So if you're married, basically, you can get $20,000 in there a year,
which is great. Yeah. But I guess I find myself leaning more and more towards CDs, especially the penalty free CDs, because the rates on those are actually not that much less than the ones that come with penalties. And yeah, so if you find yourself in need of that money, you pull that money out. You don't lose any interest that you've earned, all while earning I think CIT, one of our favorite online banks, they are offering a no penalty CD around 5%.
Nice.
Same thing with Marcus, yeah, with Goldman Sachs.
That flexibility is worth something.
That is huge. Yeah. It's great. And I'm a huge fan of the no penalty CD.
Yeah, because your CDs and iBonds have a similar sort of penalty attached to them when you try to access your money before it's time, you know, before it's fully baked in.
But if you can find one that doesn't have, yep, a penalty, oh, I feel like you can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
So hopefully that gets you pointed in the right direction, Scott. And again, I like what Joel said about investing. Don't keep the security and the safety that you receive with an iBond. Don't let that keep you from investing, because 3 out of 4 years, the market goes up. And on average, you're going to see a 10% return.
And I'm going to confess, I think when the number on iBonds hit 9.62, maybe we talked about it too much. Maybe I was a little obsessed, and maybe we didn't talk about
how... Well, it's just that it was guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
and we
obviously that's
anything,
not guaranteed in the market, but on average, that is what you earn.
Yeah.
That is that's the kind of yield you're going to see.
I saw the dollar signs, the lollipops in my eyeballs, and so we talked about it quite a lot, and it's not like it was a devastating move for anyone.
It's still a great,
but if you
smart
did
move
that instead of investing over time...
And held on to it.
You're experiencing, you know, not quite as good returns with at least that portion of your holdings. So,
totally.
All right, Matt, we got more to get to, including what do you do if your home has gone up in value significantly? Should you take some money out? We'll talk about that right after this. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Joel, longer days and warmer weather, it means our family is spending a lot more time outside. It's great. Like literally yesterday, I was in the front yard, Kate was in the garden, and I was kicking the soccer ball around with a couple of the kids. I'm loving it. But something else that you can do for your family this spring, shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year. Kate and I both have policies in place, and that means we have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to either of us, our family can cover expenses while getting back on our feet.
Yeah, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, by the way, it may not have enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. On top of that, Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another. So you can trust their guidance.
That's right. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Buddy, we are back from the break, and it's now time for the Facebook question of the week. We've talked through multiple different financial products like CDs, I-bonds. Time now to talk about another financial product, the HELOC. This one's from Meg, and she said, can someone direct me to some episodes where they talk about when or when not to use a HELOC, which is a home equity line of credit? I'm considering this option instead of cash. What do you think about HELOCs, Joel?
I think a lot of things about HELOC, Matt. I think it's a really...
a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions.
They do. Kind of like those old Disney movies, right? They stir something up in me. There's just a lot
like to... you feel bad for, like... you're like, oh, wow, I don't remember that.
Think about Bambi when his mom got shot. Like, I know they don't actually show his mother getting shot, but he knows what happened. It's super sad. I think HELOCs, there's a lot to talk about. And I think they're especially... potentially pernicious for a lot of people right now, kind of given what's happened with home values. We've talked about actually what to do with home equity back in episode 506. We talked about this in depth because...
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
There, we actually answered the question.
There you go. We're trying to get
yes, there was a previous episode.
More quickly. We'll link to that in the show notes if you want like a 45-minute discussion about...
should we include like a little sound effect, like a little bell? Or what if we actually have a bell here on the table that when we know that we've actually answered the question, we like ring it?
There's setup that needs to be involved because these are complex questions, Matt. We can't just always get straight to the answer.
Meg, episode 506, we have talked about
506.
This, but let's talk about it a little more.
Yeah, let's talk about it a little more. And if you want the in-depth explanation, go there. But we'll give kind of some thoughts real quick too. The amount of home equity that folks are tempted to grab now is bigger than it was even 2 years ago when we did that episode.
That's true.
I think the total in home equity right now is something like $30 trillion, which means the average
holy
homeowner
cow.
Has like $200,000 in home equity. Not all of that is tappable because your lender wants you to maintain a certain percentage of equity in your home. But still, that's a lot of money that you could do things with. You could tap a significant portion of that and, I don't know, choose to do a lot of things. You could buy a jet ski. You could do home renovations. There's a lot of options. I mean, really, that money then becomes a kind of a nifty little fund to live the life of your dreams, right?
And it could be.
It could, yeah, I'm not suggesting this is a good thing.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it sounded like that. But
okay.
that's not what we want you to do, of course, if you listen to the show for any period of time. And these rising home values, Matt, they've given, I think, homeowners a sense that they're wealthier than they actually are. It's something we've talked about known as the wealth effect. It makes it even more enticing to pull out some of those funds for current spending because you're like, I'm a lot richer than I was a few years ago. So, you know, now that I'm $100,000 richer in home equity, what if I just tap 50 grand of it? What's the harm in that?
No harm, no foul. Yeah, if your home has doubled in value, say in a span of just 4 or 5 years, 7 years, it might start to feel like this idle cash should be put to use, might be burning a hole in your pocket. But I think in virtually most all cases that it should remain lying dormant. There just aren't many cases where taking out a loan at 9%, that's essentially what the average is these days, where that makes a whole lot of sense, especially since Meg mentioned doing this instead of using cash. If you've got the cash on hand, man, avoid the HELOC altogether and use it. Avoid paying a nearly 10% loan, you know, avoid taking out a 10% loan where you're paying interest on that. And the only hesitation I have about episode 506, we talk about a lot of principles, I think, that remain today, and I do think it's worth listening.
Let me guess. But interest rates have changed.
The financial landscape has changed, and so the takeaway might be different. The principles remain the same, but the takeaway in the end, I feel like, because back then, rates weren't where they, I don't think they were nearly as high as they are now, and we'd essentially come off of a pretty low rate environment where HELOCs, where it was a little more common to do that, and it was a smarter move, and there's a danger in that. And I fear is that folks, because it was something that was more common and that they got comfortable with, that they're a little too comfortable with it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I remember the old HELOC. Let me go do that. And they might find themselves closer to the financial precipice because they haven't necessarily considered what the rate is. They just know that, like, oh, this is something that people do. Oh, yeah, so-and-so did this. Oh, I remember when Matt talked about this 5 years ago. And if you get too comfortable with that, you might find yourself closer to living paycheck to paycheck than you realize, and that's because you haven't taken interest rates into account.
Yeah, and I think what you said too, if you have the cash, why would you use the HELOC? Because you're talking about taking money out of an account that's earning you 5%. And I'd rather do that. Yeah, yeah, I'd rather do that than pay 9%. And so much of tapping a HELOC is dependent on whether or not you have the cash to use instead, what you want to do with those funds, and how long it's going to take you to pay the HELOC off. So, Matt, I think 90% of cases that people take money out of their HELOC for, it's a bad idea. It's to buy a product or take a vacation or something like that. That's using your HELOC like a piggy bank, and that's just a bad way to treat it. I will say, I think there are some cases where taking out a HELOC can make sense. Let's say you feel like you just have to renovate a portion of your house because you're having twins or something like that, and you don't have the cash. Being able to tap your HELOC responsibly can allow you to do the work before you have the cash on hand. But I would say within reason, right? Just like we talk about with going to college, it's like, I think some student loan debt can make sense. $150,000 of student loan debt for a silly degree that's not going to really bring you a whole bunch of earnings at the end of the day, that's not a good way of using your student loan debt. So it's only a reasonable idea to tap a home equity line of credit if it's for a good reason and you have a reasonable timeline. I think like if you have a way to be able to pay it back in 2 years or less, if you've been responsible in the other areas of your personal finances, then and you know that you can pay back what you borrowed. Some people take out a HELOC and they're like, yeah, probably 8 years down the road, I'll be able to get around to finish paying it off. That's a recipe for disaster. That to me is almost akin to credit card debt.
Well, because we don't know where rates are going. That's the thing. Like, we're closer to 9% now, but we could see it closer to credit card levels here in the future. So quite literally, it could
unlikely,
look
but maybe.
Unlikely. Like in my mind, what you spend that money on.
Imagine what credit card rates would be if.
Oh my gosh, I know. I think what you spend that money on is a little bit less important than your personal financial situation, because I think there might be a lot of folks who would justify a HELOC, like you said, to renovate their home. It's a kind of a dated kitchen, and they're thinking, well, yeah, we're taking out a HELOC, but we're increasing the value of our home. Well, I don't care that you've increased your property value. You are still making a payment every single month. That doesn't change that.
And you're not raising it dollar for dollar based on what you put in.
No,
you're raising it 60 cents on the dollar.
And you can raise the value of it, but how does that impact your income? It does not. And so the ability for you to service that debt, I think, is so important. How many other debts do you have? Do you have a fully funded emergency fund? Do you have 6 solid months of living expenses set aside?
Is it going to impact your ability to contribute to your 401k and get the full company match, et cetera? Fund that Roth IRA.
There are so many of these other things. Like, you need to be in an incredibly solid financial position to even consider taking out a HELOC, in my opinion. And if that's the case, if you are somebody who's like, yep, I don't have any other debts. We just have a reasonable mortgage on the property. We've got 6 months of living expenses. We're a dual income family. Well, if that's the case, I bet you could probably like hold off and save up and have cash on hand rather than pay the 9%, 9%+. And so I guess that's why I'm like, ugh. I think it's an incredibly rare situation where a HELOC actually does make sense, because I just don't want to see somebody paying like double digits in interest in order to fund something that isn't completely necessary.
It's definitely a be careful, tread lightly.
Be super careful.
I think we've kind of normalized HELOCs. I love the idea of actually most homeowners having a HELOC as a backup to the backup sort of emergency fund thing. But using that HELOC, oh man, it needs to be done with extreme intention and within some pretty strict guardrails so that you don't find yourself going off the rails, owing more money every month than you can actually afford. Especially, Matt, I've heard from listeners who got a HELOC when rates were low. Rates kept climbing, and guess what?
Riding that thing up into the double digits, man.
That's right. And
I hate that.
Now they're between a rock and a hard place trying to pay it off. So you definitely want to make sure you've got financial padding, financial breathing room before you take out a HELOC. And even then, maybe you just hold off. Maybe you postpone those improvements so you can do it with cash. So Meg, I hope that's helpful. And for everyone else out there who's like eyeing their home, their home's value, and they're like, there's a lot of cash sitting here. Well, kind of like you said, Matt, most of it should remain lying dormant. Like, you don't, for most people, tapping it is a bad idea.
Yeah. And here's the other, was it Nick from earlier? Everyone who's still listening, you want to be more like Nick. You want to have a pay-for house, and you don't have a pay-for house by taking out additional debt on that property. You want to be in a strong financial position.
Think about how nice it would be Nick, right?
Oh, yeah. We all want to be like Nick.
Would you rather have the updated kitchen, or do you want to live a life like Nick? Yeah, I choose Nick.
Yeah, I love it.
Let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode. This one's called Double Duck Pin. It's a double IPA, donated by listener Luke G. What were your thoughts on this one?
Beer brewed by Union Craft Brewing. It was a good beer, man. This is it's more like a traditional American IPA. Even though this is out of Maryland. Baltimore specifically, is that considered the Northeast? Is that like New England?
Oh, I think so.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Like Annapolis. That feels like New England to me.
It's probably like right on the border, though.
Yeah. So because of that, I think, well, all IPAs that come from New England must be New England hazies, but this is totally not a New England hazy. This is more like a traditional American, in this case, double IPA.
Yeah.
But it was good. Nice citrus flavors, a lot of like strong malt backbone. It's got the hops going on.
Yeah, more of the traditional IPA bitterness going on.
Some
grapefruit, piney notes, I would say. It reminds me of some of the classic Sierra Nevada IPAs that that we've been able to enjoy throughout the years. And it's nice because like we're so used to drinking some of those hazy, juicier versions. It's nice to kind of go back to the IPA roots. And I'm just reminded, I still love a bitter one too.
It's an OG. It's funny that you mentioned like Sierra Nevada, because like when's the last time we've actually had like a true West Coast IPA? Because in our minds, I think we've like created a binary sort of set up here. It's like it's either a New England or it's everything else. But like West Coast IPAs are super piney pith. Like you remember Green Flash, like was like Palette Wrecker, like some of those beers. Man, those things were insane. Like in my mind, those were like the West Coast. Maybe that's more like West Coast extreme.
Speaking of overextending yourself, Green Flash did just that. They built out another brewery on the East Coast, then they went bust, and I forget who took over that brewery. I want to say,
well, they sold off a lot of their equipment, and that's where. Man, we're getting super beer nerd here during this episode. New Realm, which opened in Atlanta, what is this, maybe 6 years ago? They're on the Atlanta Beltline, but they bought a lot of their brewing equipment after they had to shutter that location.
And this, like, going back to the one...
Mitch Steele. Speaking of West Coast IPAs, he came from Stone. Man, we're such nerds.
Inside baseball here.
West Coast. He literally wrote the book on the West Coast IPA. It's come full circle.
Well, yeah, and it just goes back to using your HELOC. Don't overextend yourself, folks. Even though it seems like a great opportunity, it could come back to bite you. So you want to be a little conservative, at least on that front.
Yeah.
But, Matt.
Glad we got to enjoy a beer, though, from, Union Craft Brewing. Thanks again to Luke G, specifically.
Appreciate you, Luke. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this one. We'll have show notes, links to some of the resources we mentioned, up on the website at howtomoney.com. But I guess we'll see folks back here on Wednesday for an interview episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
There's two kinds of people in the world. People who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health. With great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.